17. The rowers had long since lost any enthusiasm they might have had for the task. They kept at it only in response to offers of bodily violence by Flynn and the example set by Sebastian, who worked tirelessly. The thin layer of fat that had sheathed Sebastian's muscles was long since consumed, and his sun-baked body was a Michelangelo sculpture as he leaned and dug and pulled the oar. 6 days they had dragged the raft across the southernward push of the current. 6 days of sun-blazing calm, with the sea flattening, until now, in the late afternoon, it looked like an endless sheet of smooth green velvet.
"No," said Mohammed. "That means the two porcupines make love under the blanket."
"Oh," Sebastian repeated the phrase without interrupting the rhythm of his rowing. Sebastian was a dogged pupil of Swahili, making up in determination what he lacked in brilliance. Mohammed was proud of him, and opposed any attempts by the other members of the crew to usurp his position as chief tutor.
"That's all right about the porcupines shagging themselves to a standstill," grunted Flynn. "But what does this mean?"
And he spoke in Swahili. "It means big winds will blow across the sea," interpreted Sebastian, and glowed with achievement.
"And I'm not joking either."
Flynn stood up, crouching to favour his bad leg, and shaded his eyes to peer into the east.
"You see that line of cloud?"
Laying aside the oar, Sebastian stood beside him and flexed the aching muscles of his back and shoulders. Immediately all activity ceased among the other rowers.
"Keep going, me beauties," growled Flynn,
and reluctantly they obeyed. Flynn turned back to Sebastian.
"You see it?"
"Yes." It was drawn like a coal-line across the eyelid of a Hindu woman, smeared black along the horizon.
"Well, Bessie, there's the wind you've been griping about. But, my friend, I think it's a little more than you bargained for."
In the darkness they heard it coming from far away, a muted sibilance in the night. One by one the fat stars were blotted out in the east as dark clouds spread out to fill half the midnight sky. A single gust hit the raft and flogged the makeshift sail with a clap like a shotgun, and the sleepers woke and sat up.
"Hang on to those fancy underpants," muttered Flynn, "or you'll get them blown right up your backside."
Another gust? Another lull, but already there was the boisterous slapping of small waves against the sides of the raft.
"I'd better get that sail down."
"You had an oar," agreed Flynn, "and while you're at it, use the rope to fix lifelines for us." In haste, spurred on by the rising hiss of the wind, they lashed themselves to the slats of the deck. The main force of the wind spun the raft like a top, splattering them with spray. The spray was ice-cold in the warm rush of the wind. The wind was steady now, and the raft moved uneasily, the jerky motion of an animal restless at the prick of spurs.
"At least it will push us towards the land," Sebastian shouted across at Flynn. "Bessie boy, you think of the cutest things!"
And the first wave came aboard, smothering Flynn's voice, breaking over their prostrate bodies, and then streaming out through the slatted deck. The raft wallowed in dismay, then gathered itself to meet the next rush of the sea. Under the steady fury of the wind, the sea came up more swiftly than Sebastian believed was possible. Within minutes, the waves were breaking over the raft with such weight as to squeeze the breath from their lungs, submerging them completely, driving the raft under before its buoyancy reasserted itself and lifted it, canting crazily, and they could gasp for air in the smother of spray. Waiting for the lulls, Sebastian inched his way across the deck until he reached Flynn.
"How are you bearing up?"
he bellowed.
"Great! Just great!"
And another wave drove them under.
"Your leg!"
spluttered Sebastian as they came up.
"For Christ's sake, stop yapping!" And they went under again. It was completely dark. No star, no sliver of moon, but each line of breaking water glowed in dull phosphorescent malevolence as it dashed down upon them, warming them to suck air and cling with cramped fingers hooked into the slats. For all eternity, Sebastian lived in darkness, battered by the wind and the wild flying water. The aching chill of his body dulled out into numbness. Slowly his mind emptied of conscious thought, so when a bigger wave scoured them, he heard the tearing sound of deck slats pulling loose and the lost wail as one of the Arabs was washed away into the night sea, but the sound had no meaning to him. Twice he vomited seawater that he had swallowed, but it had no taste in his mouth, and he let it run heedlessly down his chin and warm onto his chest, to be washed away by the next torrential wave. His eyes burned without pain from the harsh rake of wind-flung spray, and he blinked them owlishly at each advancing wave. It seemed in time that he could see more clearly, and he turned his head slowly. Beside him, Flynn's face was a leprous blotch in the darkness. This puzzled him, and he lay and thought about it, but no solution came, until he looked beyond the next wave and saw the faint promise of a new day show pale through the black massed cloud banks. He tried to speak, but no sound came from his throat, which was swollen and closed with the salt, and his tongue was tingling numb. Again he tried. "Dawn coming," he croaked, but beside him Flynn lay like a corpse, frozen in rigor mortis. Slowly the light grew over that mad grey sea, but the scudding black crowd banks tried desperately to oppose its coming. Now the seas were more awesome in their raging insanity. Each mountain of glassy grey rose high above the raft, shielding it for a few seconds from the whip of the wind, its crest blowing off like the plume of an Etruscan helmet before it slid down, collapsing upon itself in the tumbling roar of breaking water. Each time the men on the raft shrank flat on the deck and waited in bovine acceptance to be smothered again beneath the white deluge. Once the raft rode high and clear in a freak flat of the storm, and Sebastian looked about him. The canvas and rope, the coconuts, and the other pathetic accumulation of their possessions were all gone. The sea had ripped away many of the deck slats, so that the metal floats of the raft were exposed. It had torn the very clothing from them, so they were clad in sodden tatters. Of the seven men who had ridden the raft the previous day, only he and Flynn, Mohammed, and one more were left. The other three were gone, gobbled up by the hungry sea. Then the storm struck again, so that the raft reeled and reared to the point of capsizing. Sebastian sensed it first, in the altered action of the waves. They were steeper, marching closer together. Then, through the clamour of the storm, a new sound, like that of a cannon fired at irregular intervals with varying changes of gunpowder. He realized suddenly that he had been hearing the sound for some time, but only now had it penetrated the stupor of his fatigue. He lifted his head, and every nerve of his being shrieked in protest at the effort. He looked about, but the sea stood up around him like a series of grey walls that limited his vision to a circle of 50 yards. Yet that discordant boom, boom, boom was louder now and more insistent. In the short, choppy waves, a side break caught the raft and tossed it high, lifting him so he could see the land, so close that the palm trees showed sharply, bending their stems to the wind and threshing their long fronds in panic. He saw the beach, grey-white in the gloom, and beyond it, far beyond it, rose the watery blue of the high ground.
These things had small comfort for him when he saw the reef. It bared its black teeth at him, snarling through the white water that burst like cannon fire upon it, before cascading on into the comparative quiet of the lagoon. The raft was riding down towards it.
"Flynn!" he croaked. "Flynn! Listen to me!"
But the older man did not move. His eyes were fixed open, and only the movement of his chest as he breathed proved him still alive.
"Flynn!"
Sebastian released one of his clawed hands from its grip on the wooden slatting.
"Flynn!"
he said again and struck him across the cheek.
"Flynn!"
The head turned towards Sebastian. The eyes blinked, the mouth opened, but no voice spoke. Another wave broke over the raft. This time the cold, malicious rush of it stirred Sebastian, roused a little of his failing strength. He shook the water from his head.
"Land!"
he whispered.
"Land!"
And Flynn stared at him dully. 2 lines of surf away, the reef showed its ragged back again. Clinging with only one hand to the slatting, Sebastian fumbled the knife from its sheath and hacked clumsily at the lifeline that bound him to the deck. It parted. He reached over and cut Flynn's line, sawing frantically at the wet hemp. That done, he slid back on his belly until he reached Muhammad and freed him also. The little African stared at him with bloodshot eyes from his wrinkled monkey face.
"Swim!" whispered Sebastian. "Must swim!"
And resheathing the knife, he tried to crawl over Muhammad to reach the Arab, but the next wave caught the raft, rearing up under it as it felt the push of the land, rearing so steeply that this time the raft was overturned and they were thrown from it into the seething turmoil of the reef. Sebastian hit the water flat and was hardly under before he had surfaced again. Beside him, close enough to touch, Flynn emerged. In the strength born of the fear of death, Flynn caught at Sebastian, locking both arms around his chest. The same wave that had capsized them had poured over the reef and covered it completely, so that where the coral fangs had been was now only a frothy area of disturbed water. In it bobbed the debris of the raft, shattered into pieces against the reef. The mutilated corpse of the Arab was still roped to a piece of the wreckage. Flynn and Sebastian were locked like lovers in each other's arms, and the next wave, following close upon the first, lifted them and shot them forward over the submerged reef. In one great swoop that left their guts behind them, they were carried over the coral, which could have minced them into jelly, and tumbled into the quiet lagoon. With them went little Muhammad and what remained of the raft. The lagoon was covered by a thick scum of wind spume, creamy as the head of a good beer. So, when the three of them staggered waist-deep towards the beach, supporting each other with arms around shoulders, they were coated with white froth. It made them look like a party of drunken snowmen returning home after a long night out.